Okay, I think it's about time. Let's have an AA meeting. Hello, everybody. My name is Debbie, and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday Night Blue Chip Speaker Meeting, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on AABlueChipSpeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker, and we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I'm one of them too, I must have this thing, and I get to introduce our discussion later. I mean, I don't know why I say that, because I chair every Friday, and I've got this and a half for years, and I've got it in my mind like that. I'm going to introduce our speaker tonight. And I have known her quite literally since before she even entered the world, because she's my daughter. And I brought her to her first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting when she was 11 years old. And because I wanted to teach my children that alcoholism is a disease, and I wanted them to understand the disease, and I wanted to scare the shit out of them. And in high school, she'd say, Mom, I really want to go to AA meeting with you. They make me feel better. And so that was kind of a little indication right there that she got our jokes and she got our twistedness. And but, you know, I'm so, so proud of her. And I'm going to cry probably, but I'm very, very proud of this young lady because she has come so far. And, you know, she came in when she was 24, and she's, you know, fishing. I won't say. Anyway, I'll let her tell you if she's going to tell you her age. But she's been in here for almost 6 years now, and so if you can count, we already know. And but anyway, with that, I will introduce to you my lovely daughter, Rachel.
Hey, I'm Rachel. I'm an alcoholic. For most of you who can't do simple math, I am going to be 31 in November. My sobriety date is October 17th of 2010, and I do have a sponsor, and I have sponsored women in the past. I'm not currently sponsoring anybody right now, but I guess I'll start it at the beginning. I was born November 10th, 1985, in Galax, Virginia, which is a small Appalachian mountain town in southwestern Virginia. And my mom and my dad still lives there, and I was born up there. Actually, it was a cool thing. I was born in my great-great-great-grandfather's house where he raised his family, and that was just because that house was owned by somebody else, and we were renting it from this lady at that point. But anyway, it was kind of cool to know that, you know, I got to be in that house for 2 years of my life at least, and just be a part of, like, history, I guess. I don't know. I like genealogy a lot, so I guess that just was cool to me. But my dad, you know, I heard somebody say the other day, you can't say that people are an alcoholic. So I don't give a shit what they say. My dad is an alcoholic. Or he's, you know, pretty miserable to be around when he's not drinking. And I'm, like, praying to God that he will be drinking when I'm around him because he's more fun to be around. And so anyway, my parents divorced when I was 2, and my mom and I moved to Georgia. Then mom remarried, and from age like 3 to 5, we were in this other marriage or whatever. And both my mom and dad's marriage and then the second marriage were pretty turbulent. And I don't remember a lot of what went on. I can remember bits and pieces. Mostly the parts that I remember was, you know, I had 2 newly inherited step-siblings, and they were like 5 and 7 years older than me. It was a boy and a girl, and they always got me in trouble a lot, and I wanted to, like, be so accepted by them. So I can look back at my life and know that, like, my people-pleasing things, like, I can see where that was coming into play, even being, like, a little 4 or 5-year-old, because I always felt like I was kind of, like, walking on eggshells. Am I doing the right or the wrong thing? And I did get into a lot of trouble with them, but thank God my mom got out of that marriage pretty quickly after it began. We just were single for a couple of years until she met my stepdad, who she's been married to for 23 years. So that part of my life between, like, being born and age 7, things were kind of, like, little shaken up. There was stuff that, you know, that went on, stuff that it just shook my foundation a little bit. So, but once we got settled in, my stepdad, who I do consider my dad, and I don't, like, disown my biological father. He is still my father. We moved into where they still live, up the street from Lakeside High School, and that's where I was pretty much raised. I guess early on, you know, I can see my addiction in myself, because it was like, I was thinking about this the other day, and I was like, this explains me perfectly. Like, you know the Gravitron ride that you get on at the fair, and it, like, presses you up against the wall? Well, I was riding that, like, in high school one time, and I just felt like, how can we spice this up even more? Like, you can't hardly get your head off the wall, and everybody's trying to lift their heads up, and the thing's spinning around so fast, and you're stuck to the wall. Well, this one time, I, like, turned upside down on it, and then I was sick as a dog afterwards. But it's like, if there's something fun, it's like, that's never good enough. Let's just make it more fun. And, like, that explains me to a T, and that's, like, some of the things with, you know, being addicted to excitement and things other than alcohol that I've had to learn over the years, like, to just chill the F out and kind of, you know, come about things in a more well-rounded viewpoint or whatever. So anyway, my first drink was when I was 14 years old. I was over at a buddy's house, and her parents went out for the night. I had recently twisted my ankle running cross country, and so I was, like, in an air cast thing. Wow. I was hobbling around. Well, her dad had a pretty nice-looking liquor cabinet. I wanted to really do it because I had drank before, but I didn't get drunk, and I didn't know what getting drunk was like, and I'd always wanted to get drunk ever since I was a little kid. I know that sounds weird, but I did. We poured all this crap together and or took shots off bottles. I can't remember. It was a long time ago. And I took probably the equivalent of, like, 5 shots within 10 minutes because I really wanted to get there. And I kind of overshot the mark a little. It was fun for maybe, like, 10 minutes. And then I, like, sat down on the couch. We danced around for a minute. I was hobbling around on my little ankle. And my girlfriend, she got on, like, this AIM instant messenger, which is what we did in middle school a lot. And I was just sitting there. And then all of a sudden, I did not feel so good. So I proceeded to puke all over her parents' brand-new leather couch. And then she's freaking out. And I'm like, I don't know what's going on at this point. Like, the room is spinning, and I'm sick as a dog. So she, like, puts me in the bathtub, puts my foot out of the tub so I don't mess up what's going on with my air cast and all that good stuff. And she keeps trying to, like, feed me extra stuff, and I'm, like, dry heaving. And it was really a night from hell. Like, I wanted to die. When I finally got out of the shower and got into bed to spend the night with her, and her parents came back at some point, and I guess she just told me I went to bed early or something, I felt seriously like I wanted to die. Like, the room was spinning for, it felt like eternity. And obviously that wore off, and then the next day came, and I probably did have a little bit of apprehension about doing it again. I'm not really sure. It didn't work, obviously, because I'm staying in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting tonight telling you my story. But from then on, it was like, let's do whatever we can do to have fun and get into trouble without getting caught. And that is, like, what makes the world go round for me. That's where the excitement is. That's what I've got to have all the time. And I was already lying to my mom a couple years earlier, like middle school, because I wasn't, like, the book smartestest kid. You know, I'd lie about my homework. It would take me, like, hours to do my homework because, like, my attention span, I could not stay focused on my freaking schoolwork. So I would literally get home from school, eat a snack, and then be up doing homework until bed if I was, like, a good girl. So I finally found out that what I wanted to do was not do homework all night every night. And so I'd say, oh, we didn't get that much homework, or, oh, we don't have a test coming up tomorrow. Like, you know, I'll just copy somebody tomorrow. So that's where, like, the lying started. And then some other stuff came in, like the pot smoking thing came in middle school. I tried it one time. I don't think I picked it up until later in high school again. Some other stuff at parties. A breaking point, one of the breaking points that came, and I did not get in recovery after this happened. I just kept doing what I was doing, was my parents took me for my 17th birthday up to Helen, Georgia. and they got me and two of my girlfriends our own room, and they got their own room. So we went up to Helen, and we had a nice dinner, and we got the old-timey photos done or whatever, and me and my two girlfriends, we got back to our room after all that. We went to the pool and then noticed some guys walking by. And so, of course, what makes a trip better than, like, some guys that, you know, are okay looking? We can, you know, hang out with them later. And so they told us that they lived in the back of our motel where we were staying, which was, like, the Super 8 residential part, which was not our first clue because we were just going to sneak out anyway with them, even though they were living back there. The whole story was that we snuck out, and they had drank and smoked through all their crap. There was, like, 13 guys in this little, like, one room, like, studio-looking, nasty-ass apartment back at the Super 8 residential place. So we were just hanging out, really. And some kid, you know, he was, I hope he's in here by now. I don't know what he was. He had drank everything that he could drink, smoked everything that he could smoke, and then he went to the air conditioning unit outside the window to get some Freon to huff. So he was, like, doing cartwheels everywhere, and, like, we were having a good old time, laughing our butts off. Then the cops came at around, like, 2 o'clock in the morning, and I was like, oh, my God, something had told me in my brain, you need to leave. Like, y'all should go back now. You've had enough fun. Let's just go back. Quit pushing the envelope. And I didn't. You know, I was like, oh, no, we'll just stay a little bit longer. So the cops had to come in, and they knew every guy in that room. They were all, like, on probation and, you know, with drug court or whatever. And I had to go wake up my mom, and that's when, like, all my lying career for me came to a stopping point, because I did still have enough of a conscience to, you know, that my parent that had been, like, my sole source of foundation for me. I've been lying to her for years, and I always felt like crap about it, that I didn't know how to stop because I just wanted what I wanted when I wanted it. So when the cop knocked on her door, that was not pretty. Like, she thought one of us had died, and she was, like, half asleep, and, like, what's going on, what's going on? And I was like, Mom, you need to come with us. The cops are here. And then she just looked at me, and she was like, I hate you. And I was like, God, man, that sucks. So we went and talked to the cops, and he was like, well, you know, we won't have to take them off to jail now since you're going to claim them. And she was like, yes, sir, whatever. So we went back to our hotel room with my mom this time, because we're not old enough to obviously handle a hotel room by ourselves. And she slept with us, and we left Helen like 6 o'clock in the morning the next morning, and it was not fun. So I always have had this insatiable, like, curiosity about, like, what stuff, like, oh, let's do this, let's do that, you know. And when I get burned by it, well, with alcohol, it didn't matter how many times I got burned by it, I would always drink to excess. And that's why I'm in recovery, because I couldn't drink just a few drinks. Like, what is the point of that? I don't even know that alcohol was made just to have a few drinks. Like, who does that? That just doesn't make any sense to me, to not get drunk, but you're drinking alcohol. Have a Coke. Who cares? You know, senior year comes around at Lakeside High School. I did graduate Lakeside. I used to hang out with one of my girlfriends. Her brother opened up a bar down in Buckhead, and we went to set up shop for this bar. And when he opened that, we drank for free until we were 21. We had a good old time. We knew all the cops down there, and it was like, you know, I had arrived, because I didn't need a fake ID. They knew how old I was, but they would let us drink for free. We had many long party nights, and we would always stay till close, of course. I can just remember, it was so awful, like, just getting home and, like, passing out, and then just waking up with, like, this ringing in your ears, and I kind of felt sick, and my feet hurt like hell. Those are just some of the things that I can remember, that it wasn't, you know, that was not a good time with my drinking. But if we kind of fast forward a few years after that, I graduated high school, went to massage school, moved to Florida with a guy I was dating long distance, and that was a train wreck. That did not work out at all. And I stayed down in Florida after I moved out of his house, and I found a roommate to live with down there in St. Petersburg. I would go out by myself, which was not the smartest thing. I didn't have any friends down there. He was the only one that I knew. My grandparents lived 20 minutes up the road, so that was, you know, a fallback, a safety net that I had. But I was going out with people. I had no clue who these people were. I met this guy from Roanoke, Virginia, and I felt like, yeah, I was born in Virginia. Let's hang out. So, you know, I would just, like, meet one person, and I'm like, okay, they seem safe enough. Like, I might not get raped or something, and we'll just go out with them and have a good time. But I had no clue who these people were. you know, and I would get drunk and who knows where the night would end. My mom came down to Florida and said, you know, like, what are you doing down here? You need to come back to Georgia. And so I did. So I stayed down in Florida for a year after I graduated massage school. And I came back and basically, you know, I'm a serial monogamist. So, like, I've had lots of boyfriends. But if you're not my boyfriend, then it's not going anywhere and you should just give up. Like, I didn't want to date around. That was, like, stupid. I would just kind of live between my mom's house and whoever the boyfriend was at the time. And I did date a guy who, his drinking really scared me. You know, I didn't come in with no knowledge about alcohol. Obviously, my mom, who said she came in when I was 11, I knew about the program. I knew something of a spiritual life. And then I knew something of what was working for me, my medicine, you know, let's get drunk, let's party. But after I started dating this guy, and we dated for a couple years, and I actually lived with him, he really liked drinking. And I mean, I like drinking, I drink to get drunk, but he would drink until like his eyeballs roll in the back of his head, and it made me feel really uncomfortable. And I was like, dude, you know, like, you need to pick up a white chip or we're not going out anymore. And I wasn't even in the program at this time. And so he came. I moved out of his house, back in with Mama. He came to a few meetings with me just to kind of, like, get me back or whatever. He never ended up picking up a white chip. I picked up the white chip. And that was October 17th, 2010. We didn't stay together much longer. That's when I had to find a God of my understanding, which was not hard to do. I didn't have any big problems with God. I grew up in a church that was sort of, they were already spiritually minded. I didn't ever think that God was like someone out to get me or a vengeful God. But I never used God until alcohol was taken out of my life. I never used God like I had used God in this program. You know, when I first came in, I got a sponsor, and that sponsor told me to, like, all right, start on step one out of the 12 and 12 and read that every day for a week. And so, like, that's how I started. Like, I dove right into recovery. I stayed in meetings where there are lots of old-timers because it doesn't make me feel better to sit in a meeting where they're talking about all this drama, bullcrap that everybody understands, especially alcoholics. You know the drama. You don't give a shit about that. You just, like, want the solution. And that's the point that I was to. When alcohol got removed, like, I was really ready. I was at a point where living wasn't looking so good anymore, and I just needed something to fix me. And boy, did I know, like, there's no fast fix. It's a whole lot of work. I got a sponsor. I did go through the 12 steps. The hardest part, I guess, about, you know, the last 5 years of recovery has been continuing to seek God and not getting in those times where I feel like, I don't need a meeting today because I'm feeling so good, because it only takes like 1 or 2 days to understand, no, you're not doing so good. You need to get a meeting. I've gone through times where maybe around 3 years sober, my sponsor was like, well, you don't have to like hit a meeting every day. And I'm like, cool. You know, I don't have to go to a meeting every day. So like, I'm starting to like take back my will. That did not work out so well for me. You know, I have a disease of the perception, a disease of the mind, and I heard a guy say it the best the other day at a meeting, you know, if you take away, like, I'm an alcoholic, like, what is there left? Like, it's a disease of the obsession of the mind is the main thing, and I definitely have that, and I've had that before I ever started drinking hardcore. You know, I've had character defects that I've had to deal with and seek outside help for, which I never thought I would do. You know, I am seeing a psychotherapist and have been for like the last 6 months because I was doing my best to work on these particular character defects and use the program on them and do all this stuff, but I needed more help. And I was so glad that I finally was humble enough to actually seek outside help for this, because it was really ruining my life in a lot of ways. And I just can't believe how far all these things, all these good things that have happened. It's kind of hard to explain, you know? I've just got so much good stuff, like, in my life right now. And it's stuff that I would have never even appreciated, not even one little bit, if I was still using alcohol as my God. I just don't honestly know what I would do without this program. I had to move recently. Well, I didn't have to move. My fiance and I moved to Lawrenceville about a year and 4 months ago. And that kind of shook my foundation. You know, I got sober at NABA Club. That's where my mom got sober. And I was very comfortable with NABA. And I have branched out. I've gone to all kinds of meetings all over Atlanta. But this is my home base. And so we moved about a year and 4 months ago out to Lawrenceville. And I had to get set up in a new group. And I had never really had, like, I'd sort of been, you know, kind of pampered into this because I was already so familiar with NABA Club. Now I'm kind of on my own. I'm 40 minutes away, and I've got to start building up my foundation sort of on my own because before, my mom had always been around, and, you know, I know all these people in recovery because of her, essentially, and then because of my own time in here. So I got really depressed when I moved out to Lawrenceville, and I really had a bad time, and poor Chris, my fiancé, you know, he knows that I like to blow stuff up when I don't like to look at myself. That is definitely a pattern of mine. When I don't want to, I'm just in a pissy mood and I don't want to look at whatever I need to clean out or to journal it or to call a sponsor on it. Like, I will just start a fight for no reason. And that's part of my sabotage mode, and that's something I've had innately for my whole life. I've done that with girlfriends in the past. I was always like a one girlfriend girl. You know, I would always have like two or three girlfriends in high school, and those were like my main girls, and I wasn't like in this big social clique of people. That was just never my personality. I've burned a lot of bridges in the past, and it has been really amazing to be out in Gwinnett and to find this kind of community that I miss so much here. You know, I started going to the 8 o'clock a lot. They were not really doing it for me. And then finally, and you would have to know that I really tried for this to happen because I am not a morning person. I'm a night owl. I do not like the morning time. I joined the 7 a.m. early risers group, and my friend Paul is here tonight, came to support me and hear me tell my story. That meeting has such good sobriety in it, and they do all these readings before they open it up. You know, they do the St. Francis prayer, and they do the seventh step prayer and the third step prayer and all this good stuff. And now I've even expanded more. Like, I got a walking buddy out there, and we started walking out the park together, and I have slowly built this foundation of AA out in Lawrenceville. And I was like, I did not even know that that was possible for me, because I was getting to a point where it was sort of scary. Like, I didn't want to go to meetings, and I was miserable as shit. And I don't want to drink. And that's the whole crux of it. It's like, I'm miserable, but I don't want to drink. What are my other options? You know, so I thought about offing myself a few times, but obviously I'm still here, so that didn't... I've never really, like, gone to a lot of thought about how I would do it. I don't know. I've thought about it, so we'll just put it that way. But now we've got, like, friends in recovery. We've got friends around our age, which I said, again, I'll be 31 in November, and we've got some... My friend Allie and her fiancé, they go to Gwinnett Room, and I've been hitting the 8 o'clock some more out there. And we actually had a night where we cooked out the other night and played Uno. And we smoked cigarettes, and it was just freaking awesome. It was so much damn fun, and Allie even kicked all of our asses, and I didn't want to murder her. And it was great, because I'm very competitive. So it's just more things are coming to light than I could have ever, like, imagined for myself without alcohol. And this way of life, it doesn't even have anything to do with just taking a drink away. That is, like, the very bare beginnings. And then I had to learn myself. Like, I had to learn what made me tick. And I knew a lot of all these things already as far as character defects go, but I don't know how to handle them, you know? I don't know how to unblow things up when I'm in the process of, like, damn the torpedoes full speed ahead, as Rusty likes to say. Rusty. I just don't know how to stop. There's been plenty other things. You know, sobriety is definitely not boring. I've had plenty other things to get addicted to in sobriety, and I did not do this thing perfectly. I got into a relationship 4 months in to my sobriety, and that blew up in fire and gasoline. I stayed sober. He did not. So I can understand why they say, like, kind of be careful when you're, like, just getting into sobriety. Why don't you just make it about yourself for a year? Well, I had more time to do that since I have not picked up a drink one day at a time for the last 5 years. I did stay by myself, but I didn't do it, you know, at the right time. Like, maybe take the first year to stay by yourself. There was no way, because when I want something, I want what I want when I want it. And nothing is really going to stop it. Like, I will will it into being. it never feels good when it all blows up in your face. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Obviously, that came at the time where drinking was so uncomfortable for me. I was 24 years old, and I felt like I wanted to kill myself. I'll just be completely honest. I knew there was another way of life, and I knew my drinking was way out of hand. Actually, what's funny to me, and it probably won't be funny to you, my mom's friend Leela, who was she's pretty bad alcoholic. I mean, she's a lot older than I am. She's like 60. And I saw her. She was a massage client of mine. And she said that she was going to pick up a white chip. And I had already been struggling so much in my brain with this. And I thought, well, damn, if Leela picks up a white chip, I can definitely do it. If she's going to get sober, I could definitely get sober. Because we used to, like, talk about what she was going to be drinking that night when she was getting a massage. I'm like, oh, yeah, have you tried this? And we'd, like, talk about alcohol. And then when she said she was getting sober, I was like, God dang, I really have no excuses. My higher power, you know, my sponsor told me to write down every quality of a loving God that I would want to have. And for me, it would be a loving God. The vengeful God does not work for me, because I'll be like, F you. No. So I wrote down all these qualities, and it's not like you ever have to look at that again. Just the fact that I got a God, and it wasn't me, and it was bigger than me, so that I can ask it to remove whatever's going on up here. Is the main point of that. I had to actually get a God. I always knew God, I guess, but I didn't use God like I've used God in my sobriety. Making that decision to turn my will and my life over to God is something I have to do every single freaking day. And some days it's much easier than other days. The last few days for me have not been so wonderful. I've felt kind of like mean and judgmental, which happens to me every once in a while, but that's okay. I usually do get through it and come back to the nice flowery Rachel that people think they know. I have to keep giving everything over to God, and my brain is still going. It never stops. You know, this morning I was thinking, I haven't been nervous at all to tell my story. This is like a freaking Christmas miracle, because I'm always nervous to get up in front of people. I hate reading out loud in front of people. I hate getting up in front of people. And I was just such in a bitchy way this morning that I was like, you know what? You need to hit your knees right now, and you need to freaking pray to God. And I did the 7-step prayer, and I just asked God to help me get some relief from what was going on through my mind, because I was tired and I was irritable and I still had work to do today, and then I have a story to tell, and it just felt like the day could not get going by fast enough for me. The step four, the fearless and searching inventory, fearless. Yeah, I had to really go back and just like write everything. Like I didn't do the little worksheet. The first time I did my 4-step, it was writing everything from like my first memory of alcohol all the way through to the point that I was at the time. I had a lot of crap on that. And then like the second time I went through, I had like the little worksheet, you know, the cause, the effect, and all this crap. So I did that, and it did feel better to sit down with my sponsor and talk to her about all this stuff, and to get it out, and for her to tell me stuff that I felt so, like, ashamed about, and, like, weird, like, I'm a weird freaking little person, you know, nobody else has these thoughts, nobody else does this, and she kind of leveled that out for me, because at the end of the day, we're all just human, but I always think that, like, my secrets are bigger than other people's, and it was not the case at all, you know, in many of the cases, she was like, I know exactly how you felt, I went through that exact same thing. And then I can identify, you know, I could get some relief from all this baggage of my past that I was carrying around with me. Because what I've heard in here is, you know, you come in and you've got all this crap and you've got to kind of clean it out. If you don't clean it out, it's just sitting there weighing on your shoulders, and you will do what has come so naturally your whole life. You'll drink again, because that is the medicine. That's what I need to take the freaking edge off. And God knows I do have an edge most days, and I need something to relieve me, the irritable and discontent persona that it seems to be ingrained in me. But I have gotten through many days with like flying colors with like the 10th step inventory. We'll get to that. Anyway, I got through step 5, talking to my sponsor, and then having God remove all these defects of character. That is obviously, I just said, something that I've had to do many times. I have to do it every day. Sometimes I have to do it, say it over and over again, 60 times within 5 minutes, you know, God, please remove this, please remove this, or some set prayer. I'm never really ready to have God remove all my defects of character, because they have served me somewhere in the past. They're like part of my fight or flight. I need them to survive in some occasions. I mean, it is true. I'm still here. You know, a bomb could go off. off. I don't want to be sitting here, like, praying to God if a bomb goes off and people, like, need help and they're bleeding out. Like, I want to be able to, like, go, oh, okay, this is the time that I use that fight or flight that I've always been fighting when I don't need to use it. That is something that will never go away. People with much longer than me tell me it has never gone away. It is something. It's a tool. It's just one of the many tools in the tool bag that I'm going to have to use to deal with this brain between my ears, because I've got a few screws loose, and that's all right. I'm figuring that out. Psychotherapist is helping me, too. So now I've got AA and the psychotherapist. Oh, man, and then I didn't really want to do that because I had done nothing wrong. But come to find out, I actually had. You know, I met with one of my friends. It turns out it was the girl from high school. I burned bridges. Like, I'd have a best friend, and then they would piss me off, and I'd burn the bridge every time and never talk to them again, really. So I needed to contact her because I knew that there was some bad blood between us, and I just wanted to tell her, you know, whatever it was that she was being a jerk to me for, like, I'm sorry. I don't know what it was, but I'm sorry. And just listen to whatever she had to say. That's all I had to do. And I sat down with her at Starbucks right up here at North Druid Hills, and I said, I'm really sorry for anything that I've done. You know, I just want to make an amends to you, and just, we don't have to be friends. I'm sure I didn't say this part, but in my head, we don't have to be friends again, because I really didn't, we're on two different paths. She's a bartender, and I'm an AA, so I don't really want to go hang out with her at her brother's bar. It was well received, but she did tell me the stuff that made her mad, and I had to sit through that, and that was okay. You know, I'm like, let's just get this over with at this point. And then I went on my merry way, and it wasn't so bad. You know, it wasn't so bad. I had to make a nice amends to the IRS. This was in sobriety, so know that nothing gets perfect. After you stop drinking, I had to sell, like, my, I had this car, I came in, I got sober with this car. I had to sell the car to pay back the government because I wasn't paying the government because I had too many bills to pay. So anyway, that's just another lesson. But that feels good not to be hanging over my head anymore. That was a financial insecurity big time, because you don't want the IRS getting your ass. That's just not fun. I've had to learn some hard knock kind of lessons because I wanted what I wanted when I wanted it. And it didn't pan out so hot. They continue to take personal inventory. I still do that. I had to, just the other day, like I said, lately I've been feeling very judgmental. And believe me, when I'm judgmental to everybody outside of me, I'm definitely beating the crap out of myself on the inside of me. So I have to journal at night. This really helps. It usually takes me a lot of pain to get to this point with it. But when I'm having a really shitty day because of what's going on in between my ears, usually I'm not being grateful for anything that I have. My ego is really having a good old time doing what it does best. The other night when I took a 10-step inventory because I was in such pain and I just wanted a break from my own insanity, I mostly just wrote down stuff that I was grateful for. Stuff that I got done during the day. I didn't give myself credit for anything that I had done that day. Not one thing, because I'm too busy judging everybody and judging myself, making up this world that is not actually true in reality. I had done a lot of good stuff. I had hit a meeting that day. I had talked to newcomers. I had reached out to my sponsor. Like, I just, my brain has a weird way of flipping it. When I do a lot of stuff that I actually need to be giving myself a pat on the back for, I'm not getting shit. Nobody else is either, believe me. It's just nice to kind of get it back into reality. Like, what's really going on here? Like, what actually did happen today? Because my brain has a really sick way of twisting it up to where I'm a piece of shit, you're a piece of shit.
It's taught through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact.
Yeah, not so good at the meditating thing, especially recently. The only time I've meditated in the past is when I have like a CD or something on like Pandora that I can listen to. It's always better for me because my brain is so busy to do guided meditations, and those do help when I actually do them. But again, for some reason, I really like pain a lot, and it takes me a lot of pain. And when I get there, then I'll meditate willingly. But that has been the case so far. It's just been the cycle of, oh, I'm doing really great. I feel great about sobriety. I'm seeing new faces in the room. I'm introducing myself. I'm hanging out with friends in recovery. And then I kind of start taking my will back. And then I take it back too much where I get into a lot of pain. And then I finally say uncle, and it's right back on it again, back on sobriety, back on calling friends and talking about getting honest with how I am, because that is the only thing that's ever helped me, is being able to be honest. I cannot stand having to put on a face or be fake. It's just not me. It's not me at all, and I have never been like that. And then the last step, sending it on down the line as far as meeting with people. I've sponsored many women. I don't think any of them stayed sober. But you know, if you don't want it, you're not going to get it. If you want it, then you're going to get it. And I know that's my case, because when I came in here and picked up my white chip, I have done what it takes one day at a time with everything that's going on in my life and living life on life's terms and dealing with the hard knocks of life and the hard knocks that I put on myself from the decisions I make and not picking up a drink, because at the end of the day, I know to the bottom of myself that it's not going to solve anything. I have had fleeting moments of thinking, wow, that does really sound good, or like, yeah, let's go party, and then I just have to sit through it. And it's the most uncomfortable shit that anybody could ever sit through. But the only thing that has given me the most gratification and peace in my life is when I'm going through that or feeling that excitement or fantasizing a drink in my head. It hurts so bad at the time to, like, choose God over that, because my ego is, like, getting so pumped and excited on something that it's hard to, like, rein it back in. But when I do and just kind of sit and get quiet, which is meditation, I guess, nothing gives me a more peaceful and gratifying feeling than choosing God over ego. It has really, really been what this whole program has been about for me. And I wanted to read one thing before I close it up, because it went so great for today. It was from the Daily Reflections, August 1st, Daily Reflections, Living It. The spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. That's on page 83 of Alcoholics Anonymous. When new in the program, I couldn't comprehend living the spiritual aspect of this program. But now that I am sober, I can't comprehend living without it. Spirituality was what I had been seeking. God, as I understand Him, has given me answers to the whys that kept me drinking for 20 years. By living a spiritual life, by asking God for help, I have learned to love, care for, and feel compassion for all my fellow men, and to feel joy in a world where before I felt only fear. And that about sums it up, and I really appreciate y'all being here tonight.
Thanks, Fallon, and thanks for being kind to me.
Nothing to comprehend.